Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. The war we're in, for sure, and the war that our friend Diana West, syndicated columnist, best-selling author, and just an extraordinary radio guest, is all over, and thankfully so. Diana West, in her syndicated columns, and you can read them at dianawest.net, has been covering particularly closely of late several developments on the threat here in the United States posed by various Muslim Brotherhood front groups and some of their efforts that, well, they call civilization jihad. Diana, let's talk about all that. Welcome back. It's good to have you with us.
Thank you, Frank. Yes, there's a lot to talk about.
Jihad Day at the National Cathedral might be the first point of entry on this conversation. You've covered this in your column. What was the story with respect to the first ever Islamic prayer event there last Friday?
Well, you could call it Jihad Day at the National Cathedral. You could also just call it Friday Juma Prayers because, of course, the sermon was drawn from traditional Quranic verses, garden variety verses, in fact. But once you translate them, once you actually decode them, which is how you have to read the Quran, you find that this was very offensive to Christians and Jews, and that they actually included a jihad verse, a verse that presages the conquest of unbelievers. So this was actually quite an extraordinary event in plain sight, and yet media and certainly the church seems just horribly unaware.
Yeah, willfully blind, I think, is the term Andy McCarthy uses for it. But it borders on, if not actually crosses the border, into a kind of submission that it seems to me can only further excite and encourage these enemies. Talk, Diana, a bit about who were the organizers, who were the perpetrators of this event with its various offenses to Christians and Jews and calls to jihad.
Well, the event was organized by the Reverend Canon Gina Campbell, who is the cathedral's director of liturgy, and the South African ambassador, Ibrahim Rasool, who is a Muslim and who delivered the main sermon. It's kind of a strange team, you might say, to end up in this Friday Islamic prayer service at the National Cathedral, but this is what happened. They came together over a memorial service for Nelson Mandela that was held at the cathedral, believe it or not, after he died. And suddenly, the cathedral was being envisioned as a mosque by the ambassador and Gina Campbell as well. They suddenly saw a part of the cathedral that didn't have iconography, and they could actually set something up and have what the cathedral saw as an ecumenical service. But as you know, this was an act of jihad in the sense of establishing an Islamic space inside the cathedral. And indeed, worshippers there had their backs to the one cross that was in the vicinity of this part of the cathedral. And
not just their backs, Diana West, their backsides as
they
bent over in prayer.
Yes, exactly. And the thing is, when you think of the whole concept of ecumenism, it is an embrace of religion or interfaith embrace that is supposed to be tolerant, if not embracing, of the other aspects of faith. It's supposed to be a reciprocal kind of act, and this was not any such thing. It was hostile and aggressive in its design, in its practice, and indeed, going back to these verses, which our friend Andy Bostom spent quite a lot of time analyzing and going to the Quranical commentaries to give us the meanings of these verses, it's an outrage, and the thing that's shocking is that media has been fairly silent on the content of the sermon.
Yeah, this is, again, a service that Andrew Bostom has provided for quite some time, parsing these phrases and helping put them in context and give us a sense of, those of us who are not Muslim, of what it really means to those who are, or at least those who are Sharia adherent among the Muslims. And Diana, one other party to this exercise, this real travesty, it seems to me, in this Episcopalian cathedral, were groups that have recently been in the news for a somewhat different reason. Talk a little bit about, notably, the Council on American-Islamic Relations and another group called the Muslim American Society.
Well, the service was actually an invitation-only religious service, which is odd, you know, on its face. And the guests included members from the Al-Dallas Area Muslim Society, or ADAMS, and the Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE, the Islamic Society of North America, and Muslim Public Affairs Council. And, you know, I discussed in my column that's being quite a roster if Spot the Muslim Brotherhood Front is your hobby, because we're looking at two unindicted co-conspirators in the list, Karen Isna, and we have the double whammy this month coming from United Arab Emirates, of all places, that have now named CARE, one of these attendees, in their list of terrorist groups.
Mm-hmm. Not just an attendee, but one of the organizers, as I recall, a convener.
One of the organizers, and I would add Ambassador Razul from South Africa, actually addressed one of their annual shindigs in 2013 and saluted CARE repeatedly in his address. So there is quite a tight relationship here.
And when we say they're Muslim Brotherhood Front organizations, or in the words of the United Arab Emirates, they're terrorist front organizations, what does it mean, Diana West, that we've got groups like these using this technique they call bridge building in some settings, or interfaith dialogue, to penetrate, and it would appear, subvert from within these, you know, houses of worship, the clerics who run them, and presumably, to some extent at least, the congregations that pay for the facilities?
Well, I believe these are acts of civilization jihad. And when we talk about outreach, I see it more as inroads. These are Muslim inroads into American institutions. The communists did this before that. And in fact, the Muslims are following the same inroads that the communists made and hollowed out our institutions in the past.
Not just inroads, these are essentially the same subversive techniques.
Yeah, the same techniques, that's what I mean.
And this is what you've brought out so beautifully in your book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character, is these parallels between the communist tradecraft, if you will, and that of the Brotherhood and other Islams.
Absolutely. And again, if you go to the Islamic law, you understand, for example, Reliance of the Traveler, which is a big decoding book that people should become aware of. It's in English. It's very understandable. In terms of breaking down aspects of Sharia, you understand that ecumenism is actually not possible by Islam toward other faiths, because they look at Christianity and Judaism both as remnant cults, this is the language, formerly valid religions, valid in their own time, which is the time before Islam. And so if Islam is considered the seal, the final religion, then what they're saying is that Christianity and Judaism are essentially outmoded, and there can be no ecumenism, there can be no reciprocity. So the whole thing is a charade, and it's just incredible that church leaders at the National Cathedral and in synagogues and other churches across the country are so unaware of this and take everything at their face value and refuse to dig.
It's partly they're duped, and it's partly that they're not seeing what there is to see. And, you know, I'm reminded, Diana West, of this famous and very influential ideologue of the Muslim Brotherhood and Islamists more generally, Sayyid Qutb, who had a phrase to the effect of, there's such a vast chasm between Islam and the unbeliever that no bridge can be built to span it except for the purpose of bringing the unbeliever to Islam. And this goes to your point, which is so well taken, and that of Andrew Bostom as well, that this is a one-way street or one-way bridge, if you will. It's about proselytization and recruitment and indoctrination and subversion. And it is reminiscent of past totalitarian efforts to destroy us, in this case, very much vectored on the church, the religious community of faith in this country. Diana, we have to leave it at that. I'm afraid we're hard out of time, but you have enriched us, as always, with your thoughts on this subject and your great columns at dianawest.net, as well as, folks, her two books, Death of the Grown-Up and American Betrayal. Come back to us again very soon, Diana. In the meantime, all the best. Next up, Jim Hansen, senior fellow with the Center for Security Policy. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
If you listen to this radio station a lot, you may have noticed our brand new name. It's got a catchy ring to it. But there's more than that. The name actually tells you who we are and what we do in one word. It took us a while to come up with this, but we realized if there's one thing we want to be to DC listeners, it was this. We want to be your answer to everything, to what happened while you slept, to why am I stuck in traffic, to how do you get control of this country again. Big stuff and little stuff. This may be a tall order for one radio station, but we know we're up for it. AM 1260, The Answer.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts, now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved, and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by Jim Hansen, a senior fellow now at the Center for Security Policy, I'm pleased to say, and a former Special operator in the United States Army and one of the driving forces behind Black5.net and also the Warrior Legacy Foundation. Jim, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Great to have you as always.
Always a pleasure, Frank.
You have been very productive of late in a new product line I'm thrilled with at the center's website, securefreedom.org. It is the Free Fire Zone. You've been putting out some very high-quality video commentaries about various topics du jour. A recent one is where I'd like to start, Jim, and that is with the president's, as you call it, imperial amnesty. Talk a bit about what President Obama is expected to do, perhaps as soon as tomorrow, with respect to amnesty of illegal aliens and what the Congress is doing, or should be doing at the very least, to stop him.
Well, he seems to feel that the will of the voters and the will of Congress as expressed by not passing immigration reform empowers him in some way. So the voters don't want it, Congress won't do it, but he's going to, and that's an abuse of power. Whether or not it's a constitutional crisis is the Andy McCarthy's of the world can weigh in on that and do, but it's a definite disregard for what the American people have asked our leaders to do. And so I think the Congress then, if he's going to act like an emperor, the Congress should close the purse strings, and if he's going to be an emperor, let's make him one with no clothes and no ability to pay for any of the crazy things he wants to do, like amnesty for 5 million illegal aliens. I think that's a great place to start, and hopefully in the lame duck, they will not give him the money he needs to do these crazy things.
Hopefully is the right word, and yet it remains very much to be seen if they will interpose an objection and preserve the option for restricting the purse, as they say. We're visiting with Jim Hansen, now a senior fellow with the Center for Security Policy and a prodigious contributor through the Free Fire Zone, including a new video entitled Imperial Amnesty. And Jim, the idea that the Congress would simply say no to the president by defunding any use of taxpayer resources to give work permits or give driver's licenses or other documents, social security cards, most especially for the federal folks, to the undocumented migrants, as he is fond of calling President Obama, is something that seems to be the most efficacious way to respond, as you said, to this abuse of power. And yet, Jim, what Congress, as best I can tell, is poised to do in the Republican-controlled House, to say nothing of the Senate under Democratic control for a few more days, is give him all of the money he needs to do this through some vehicle, whether it's an omnibus bill, as they call it, or a relatively long-term continuing resolution. What is up with that?
It baffles me completely, Frank. I don't understand how the Republicans can believe that the voters haven't spoken, the voters haven't given them the power and the responsibility to stop. We yelled stop. Everybody who voted went and said all the things that are going on right now are insane and we don't want them to happen. We can't move Obama out of the White House for a couple more years, but we can at least stop him from doing things like giving illegal aliens the green light to become full-fledged citizens, more or less, and can throw that away is absurd. And if they do it, I don't know what our option is if they do that. And then 2 years from now, we're stuck with a choice of who we want to run things. I don't know who you pick at that point.
Well, my guess is, Jim, my guess is that a lot of Americans are going to respond as you and I both feel, that this is outrageous. And I don't know whether it would translate into enough of a firestorm to actually shake up this leadership in the House or the incoming leadership of the Senate, but it should if they allow this travesty to go forward untrammeled. We'll be watching it closely, as I know will you at the Free Fire Zone, Jim, among other places. Jim, I've long said about you that you bring a wonderful perspective to our program, and indeed to the larger work of the Center for Security Policy now. A boots-on-the-ground perspective, as it were. A boots-on-the-ground is something President Obama has said he is not going to introduce into Iraq or Syria for the purpose of degrading and ultimately defeating, his words, this group, the Islamic State. And yet, we're seeing more troops sent over, ostensibly in training missions. We clearly have special forces units operating in probably both of those countries. And we're also now being increasingly signaled by Martin Dempsey, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, that in fact we may well need to put boots on the ground. Talk a little bit about what's happening here, Jim. Is this just the predicted mission creep or something else?
I don't know what our mission is, Frank. So I guess to start with, if the mission's creeping, it's pretty well undefined. Now, the president, as you mentioned, he did have a field day with all the D words of degrading, destroying, dismissing, all that stuff. But he is not committed to winning a war against ISIS. So are we at war with them? I don't know. And they don't know. And the troops don't know. So sending more troops for an undefined mission that's creeping is quite possibly the worst of all scenarios. So I don't know what he's doing. He's not doing it well. It's not something that anybody has a handle on and really that there's any strategy behind. So if he's not going to commit to winning the war and destroying ISIS completely, then I don't think he should send a single troop, and I think we should stop wasting our time.
Yeah, time and money, and I fear at some point probably lives. Jim Hansen, you're in touch with former colleagues who are still in uniform, I'm sure. Your work at Black5.net has obviously been another vehicle for, communicating with those who can't speak for themselves, but who nonetheless are very much in the fight. What are you hearing from them about what the mission is or the commander-in-chief's execution of his responsibilities in this regard?
Well, the saddest thing is looking at the same places where their friends died and many of them were wounded and all our efforts and energies were focused years ago toward an actual victory in Iraq, where we did win a war there. We did. We lost the peace when Obama decided that it wasn't worth keeping and that he was not going to stay and help the Iraqis through a transition from tyranny to democracy. But now the idea of going back across the same ground where the blood is barely dry and fighting more or less another version of the same bad people, it's killing them, both literally and figuratively. And I don't think there is any stomach for the fight among the people that he's sending on a mission he hasn't defined.
Not a stomach for the fight, but a stomach for this fight conducted in this fashion under these rules of engagement without a mission clearly defined under a commander-in-chief in whom I think rightly they have less and less confidence. Jim, we have to leave it at that, I'm afraid. I didn't get a chance to talk to you about your brand new video at the Free Fire Zone about Obama's moral relativism between Israel, the victim of Palestinian attacks, and the perpetrators of those attacks. We'll be getting into that in some detail with our next two guests, Carolyn Glick and Emmanuel Ottolenghi. But thank you for your new video. We'll look forward to talking with you about it and more next week. Until then, be well, my friend. Next up, we'll be talking with, as mentioned, Carolyn Glick. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom. With Frank Gaffney.
People from around the country have no clue what we're like here in Washington, D.C. Yeah, we've got our whack jobs like the guy who climbed the fence and walked around the White House. We have the people who see the black helicopters. But there's one common denominator for all of us, friends and family. And there's no place where relationship means more than it does right here. Yeah, we may be famous for the dignitaries, but friends and family, that makes us tick. And frankly, this radio station gets that. That's why I listen. AM 1260, The Answer.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The voters have spoken. They gave a mandate to Republicans in Congress that pretty clearly communicated the imperative of stopping presidential lawlessness and especially his behavior threatening public security. The leaders of the House of Representatives, though, seem not to have gotten the memo. The first test will be whether they will block President Obama's unlawful and effectively permanent transformation of millions of illegal aliens into legal residents, workers, and recipients of this country's generous welfare, Social Security, education, and other benefits. That could happen as soon as tomorrow. Unfortunately, the House leadership apparently has neither any real interest in or any practical plan for preventing such a national security, economic, and political disaster. We need Congress to deny funding for the implementation of any illegal presidential amnesty, and we need it done now. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
Navigating this world when you are undereducated can be difficult. I'm Dr. Ben Carson, and I know this for a fact. When I was growing up, my family lived in dire poverty, and because of my poor learning skills, my classmates called me dummy. My life began to turn around when my mother encouraged me to read. I went from the bottom of my class to graduating from Yale University and becoming the youngest director of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins Hospital. I know how important it is to nurture a child's dream.
When I grow up, I want to become a scientist.
I want to be a doctor, just like Ben Carson.
I hope to become an engineer.
I want to be a teacher or maybe a broadcaster.
The Carson Scholars Fund is impacting schools across the nation by encouraging children to read, write, and excel at math and science so they can realize their dreams. We need your help. To learn more about the Carson Scholars Fund and to donate, visit our website at carsonscholars.org.
After all, the person who has the most to do with your success is you.
This is Center for Security Policy Senior Fellow Fred Flights. With the nuclear talks with Iran possibly ending by a November 24 deadline, an important question is being ignored by the news media. Just how close is Iran to making a nuclear weapon? Well, Iran is much closer to constructing a nuclear bomb than the Obama administration will admit. Using its 9,000 uranium centrifuges, Iran could make enough nuclear fuel for one weapon in 2.2 to 3.5 months. Iran has enough reactor-grade uranium to fuel at least 7 nuclear bombs, possibly more. The agreement being negotiated with Iran reportedly will not reduce the number of bombs Tehran can construct and may only lengthen this deadline by 2 weeks. The nuclear talks amount to appeasement of Iran. Congress should therefore renounce these talks and demand a new approach that fully addresses the threat from Iran's nuclear program. This is Fred Flights of the Center for Security Policy. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, I'm very pleased to say, with a friend and colleague of many years, Carolyn Glick. She is a columnist for the Jerusalem Post. She is an author of several very important books, including The Israeli Solution. She is the commentator par excellence on this program on matters involving Israel and in many other outlets. And not least, she is the director of the Israel Project at the David Horowitz Freedom Center. Carolyn, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It is always great to have you with us.
It's great to be on your program, Frank. Thanks for having me.
I hate to say this, but one of the reasons for wanting to talk with you rather urgently has been yet another act of jihad against the people of Israel. In this case, the murder of several rabbis and others engaged in worship in Israel yesterday. What are we to make of this barbarism and its perpetrators?
That's really, the people who were on the scene yesterday said they hadn't seen anything like it since the Holocaust. Jews in prayer, wearing their prayer shawls and their phylacteries, and they're engaged in the morning prayers, were brutally murdered with axe-wielding, machete-wielding, and gun-toting terrorists who shot them at point-blank range and stabbed them in the head with meat cleavers and tried to cut up their arms while they were praying. This is an act of barbarism and of unspeakable evil, and it was wholly incited by the Palestinian leadership, by their religious leaders who are calling for jihad, who are spreading blood libels about Jews, claiming that a Palestinian, the Arab-Israeli driver of a bus who killed himself, who hung himself in his bus the other day, was murdered by Jews. They've been pushing that line. They've been building up on a level of violence and hatred and incitement to murder over the past couple of months in Jerusalem among the Arabs of the city to try to push them away from Israeli society that they have been integrating inside of and to transform them into this murderous a threat to Jews that we saw carried out yesterday yet again in the most graphic way we've seen so far in the current wave of Islamic violence against Jews in Israel that's being inspired and incited by the Palestinian Authority and by all the other major leadership factions of Palestinian society.
Develop that just a little bit further, Carolyn. Incitement. The evidence that this is being done not just by Hamas, but by the so-called good Palestinians, the partners for peace, as we've had them described endlessly by, among others, the Obama administration, Mahmoud Abbas and his Palestinian Authority specifically. What is it that is being done in that regard that is unmistakably tied directly to the latter at the highest levels?
Mahmoud Abbas made a statement that's been broadcast dozens and dozens and dozens of times over and over again to music in the background. He made a statement last month to an audience of Fatah members, that's a supposedly moderate terrorist organization that he runs, calling for them to take any means to protect Al-Aqsa Mosque, the Islamic mosque that was built on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, and claiming that Jews are trying to desecrate it. And he's used terms like desecrate and pollute to describe Jews who wish to alight to Judaism's holiest site and visit it. And so it was a direct order on his part for them to engage in violence against Jews. And the fact that then that statement, which is calling in no uncertain terms for violence against Jews, has been broadcast multiple times on a daily basis on Palestinian television that he controls ever since is an indication that he is directly engaged in incitement. And not only he, but all of his advisors have been calling for the murder of Jews also on Palestinian television, and their calls have been repeated endlessly. And that's the PA, the Hamas, for its part, of course, is constantly engaged in. And then every time that there is a murderous attack against Jews, Fatah's webpage, its Facebook page, Palestinian media, again, that is controlled by the PLO, by the Palestinian Authority, all of them glorify the murders. There was an attempted assassination of a civil rights activist in Israel named Yehuda Glick, no relation to me, but he has devoted his life to try to get the state of Israel to recognize and respect the Jews' freedom of worship of Jews on the Temple Mount, something that Jews are prohibited from doing, and if they're fomenting a jihad and mass murder of Jews by Muslims that are incited to kill us. And so for his efforts to try to guarantee the freedom of worship of Jews on the Temple Mount, he was a victim of this incitement directly, and a Palestinian terrorist who I shot him three times in the gut as he was leaving an event in Jerusalem. And then Israeli police killed his would-be assassin in a shooting battle when they came to arrest him, and he opened fire on them. And Abbas sent a letter to the terrorist's family congratulating and praising him for his act of martyrdom. So, you know, these kinds of direct actions by Abbas are contributing to an atmosphere that is taking more and more forceful hold of Palestinian society and of Israeli society, Arab society, in which people are being incited to murder Jews at will at every opportunity.
Let me ask you about another, well, I'd call it act of incitement, and that is not coming from the putative Partners for Peace that the Obama administration insists we have in these Palestinian Authority figures, but from the Obama administration itself. Carolyn, I think you've been following this closely. You've served in the Israeli government at the highest levels, working for current, of course, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Have you ever seen the kind of depths of the relationship between the United States and Israel that we're currently experiencing? And talk, if you would, a little bit about what the administration is doing that is compounding that problem and, I'm afraid, contributing to this kind of incitement.
The administration is absolutely contributing to the overall atmosphere. We've never had a situation where relations have been so bad between Jerusalem and Washington, and entirely at Washington's initiative. The Israelis have tried to take every possible measure to placate Obama, but nothing has worked. The State Department has refused to condemn Palestinian incitement until after the massacre of the rabbis yesterday in prayer. And even then, it was mealy-mouthed condemnation. Matt Leaf from the Associated Press and the press briefings of the State Department has repeatedly asked State Department spokespeople whether they would acknowledge that the incitement that's being undertaken by the Palestinians is playing a central role in the violence, and they have refused repeatedly to do so. They have refused to condemn or otherwise criticize the boss for his role in fomenting the violence, and have constantly berated Israel for allowing Jews to build homes in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel, which is an openly racist, bigoted policy against Jews, denying us civil rights in our capital city, in our country. And so the Americans have taken an incredibly one-sided position, pro-Palestinians, anti-Jewish, for the past several months, and this has been a factor enabling the Palestinian violence against us, because it's telling Abbas and the Hamas and would-be Palestinian bombers that their people will be rewarded expansively by the Americans and, of course, by the Europeans for acts of murder against Jews.
We're going to talk more with Emmanuel Ottolenghi a bit about the role that the Europeans are playing here, but this is extraordinarily helpful, Carolyn Glick, on both the nature of the threat that Israel is facing from the Palestinians and from our own government at a time when we need solidarity with our few friends in the Middle East more than ever. There is no better friend than Israel, in my estimation, and no better advocate for Israel than you, Carolyn Glick. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us from the David Horowitz Freedom Center, Carolyn Glick, and the Jerusalem Post. Keep up your terrific work and come back to us again very soon. Next up, Emmanuel Ottolenghi from the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, we have served our nation as a force in readiness.
Get some rear security.
From combat operations to humanitarian assistance in every corner of the world. No matter where the mission takes us today, or wherever our country needs us tomorrow, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for each other, for our nation, for us all, the few, the proud, the Marines.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
I lost my healthy 27-year-old son to influenza. Jacob wasn't someone you'd expect to die from the flu. He was strong, a martial arts athlete. After 5 weeks of fighting, Jacob died.
I'm Dr. Bill Schaffner of the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases. Each year, influenza claims the lives of Americans of all ages, including healthy young adults like Jacob. Ask about vaccination the next time you're at your doctor's office or pharmacy. Visit adultvaccination.org.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined by Dr. Emmanuel Ottolenghi. He is a senior fellow at the highly esteemed Foundation for Defense of Democracies. He is the author of numerous books, several of them touching on subjects that we'll be discussing with him in the course of our interview, notably involving Iran, but that in a moment. Emmanuel, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It's great to have you with us.
It's great to be with you. Thank you for having me.
I wanted to start more or less where I left off with Carolyn Glick, another distinguished expert on the Middle East. She shared with us her very profound concerns about the violence that's currently being perpetrated against Israel, notably by and with the incitement of the Palestinian Authority, and she would argue with the incitement as well of the Obama administration. You've written recently about the European foreign minister who has just been touring Israel. Ironically, at the moment that more of that violence has broken out, most recently in Jerusalem. Talk, if you would, Emmanuel, about what the Europeans are up to at this moment in terms of their own individual and collective actions that are probably contributing to this uptick in the violence against Israel at the moment.
We should draw a distinction between governments and public opinion at large and civil society. There are two levels, two spheres where Palestinian action and the perception of the Palestinian cause are being treated slightly different, but both are contributing to the situation. At the government level, you have this parallel trend of increasing desire to recognize Palestinian statehood. We have seen the newly elected left-leaning Swedish government rush to that conclusion recently. The Spanish and the French assembly slated to hold a symbolic vote on this. Increasing support for such a move within the spheres of UK decision makers. So you have a trend that Europeans will not recognize as contributing to the violence, but it is one that basically awards the Palestinian Authority for despite its lack of readiness to negotiate and make concessions. So it certainly helps strengthen a rejectionist Palestinian position. Then you have, of course, the activities at the civil society level and in the media, which impact public opinion, which have spiked since the summer war between Israel and Hamas in Gaza. And that, of course, is also pushing for boycott, divestment, and sanctions, for increasing the legitimation of Israel. And so you have this climate in Europe that tends to discount and belittle Israeli suffering and Palestinian extremism on the other hand, and inflate and treat excessively whatever Israeli action and interpreting it as a step somehow justifies or excuses Palestinian violent responses. I think this is the picture that describes Europe best today.
And it is being reflected, among others, I think, in your estimation, by this woman, Federica Mogherini, who has recently taken up the position of High Representative for Foreign Affairs in Brussels, though her predecessor, Catherine Ashton, apparently has not quite laid down her burden, at least as it relates to the next topic I wanted to turn to with you, Dr. Emmanuel Ottolenghi, namely the Iran nuclear negotiations. Your organization, the Foundation for Defense of Democracy, has really been at the forefront of the analysis of and raising concerns about what the Obama administration is doing, that will almost certainly, if all accounts are to be credited, leave the Iranians with the vast preponderance of their nuclear weapons-related program, and may even legitimate it in the deal the president is poised to finish, we're told. Talk a little bit about the nature of the deal as it's shaping up at the moment, as you see it, and the dangers inherent in it.
Well, we went into these negotiations on the assumption that Iran had a history of concealing its nuclear activities and deceiving the international community in its pursuit of nuclear weapons capability. We went into these negotiations determined to exact from Iran full compliance with its international obligation, full transparency on its past activities, and also with a desire to reach a deal that would force Iran to dismantle those elements of a nuclear program that could be used for military purposes, force Iran to reveal past activities and embrace a much more stringent inspection and verification regime that would ensure no further illicit and clandestine activities could happen as much as that is possible. Now, that was the position that we went with to negotiate with Iran. today, it seems that in the rush to obtain a deal at all costs, none of those red lines have been kept. They have been blurred very ably by the Iranian side, but also I think with some perhaps unwitting complicity by the Western side that almost prefers to have a bad deal than recognize and acknowledge that Iran is not prepared to comply with international obligations and open up its nuclear activities, past and present, to the kind of scrutiny and verification that would ensure no nuclear bomb emerges from their nuclear industrial complex.
You know a lot about this. We're talking with Dr. Emmanuel Ottolenghi, a senior fellow at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies and author, among other things, of Iran, The Looming Crisis. Can the West live with Iran's nuclear threat? And Emmanuel, what you've described really is the kind of unraveling of the West's position, the hardening of the Iranian regime's position. They now talk about their inalienable rights to, these nuclear activities that in some cases, notably enrichment, seem unmistakably connected to the bomb-making ambitions of that regime. Can the West writ large, can Europe, can the United States, let alone Israel, live with a nuclear Iran in your estimation?
Well, you know, the answer can go both ways. Depends how do you define the quality of life. We could live with a nuclear Soviet Union occupying half of Europe for 45 years. But the price of coexisting with that menacing and dangerous reality was 45 years living, tiptoeing around the potential for nuclear war and having to concede terrible consequences all around the world. From the occupation of Hungary in 1956 by Soviet tanks to the Cuban Missile Crisis to, the genocide in Southeast Asia, there were a lot of realities that we had to sort of allow to happen as bystanders as a consequence of the East-West, superpower nuclear confrontation. So we could live with a nuclear Iran, but the price of living with a nuclear Iran would be constant tensions potentially escalating into a full-fledged nuclear war in the Middle East, and of course conceding Iran's, or perhaps beyond that, conceding Iran's hegemony over the region.
This is a subject that I want to return to with you because you've addressed the question directly, and I think importantly, I fear that the difference, of course, is we tiptoed around but deterred the Soviet Union from actually engaging in thermonuclear war. It's not entirely clear to me that can be done with the Iranians, but this is for another day. We'll look forward to talking with you, Dr. Emmanuel Ottolenghi of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to the rest of you for joining us as well. I hope you all will do so again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.